Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to welcome Nancy, who is the person who has boldly stepped forward to be the administrator for Sangha Market. And welcome, Nancy.
Thank you, Jen.
For those of you, I was just going to tell folks, for people who joined us on the special radio show that we're having weekly to support people who have made the commitment to raise $1,000 for the Zen Monastery Peace Center in 2012, this will be something of a repeat, but we thought it was important enough that we wanted to talk again about some of the changes that are coming to Sangha Market on open air. So you've agreed to be here with us to do that.
Yes, I have, and thank you so much for giving me the opportunity.
So on Thursday, we talked about both kind of what some of the changes are that we can expect to see and why you decided to do them. I wonder if we can.
Okay, yes. Well, what we're going to basically keep the same website that we have, but we've upgraded the platform so that we can have a little more flexibility. And we're doing this, the primary goal of doing this is just to simplify the website and the experience that people have using it. So with that in mind, one of the most, the biggest change will be is that we're going to take off the auction option that we currently have. That seems to be confusing to a lot of people, and myself included, and when you're listing something, it's confusing. Also, when you're selling something, it becomes confusing.
Yeah, you pointed out on Thursday that it's not really necessary in terms of what we're trying to accomplish and really what our need is. We don't really need that auction function.
Exactly, yes. And what this will do, it will make the buying process just a two-step process where, you know, you go online. You don't have to register with this new system. As a buyer, you can just go to the item that you want, click on it, and start the buying process right away. And for some reason, the old system had us register with all of our name and that kind of thing. So this will work a lot quicker, you know, for those that don't want to spend a lot of time but just want to buy an item and, you know, and
definitely
get on with their lives.
Well, and to accomplish the ultimate goal, which is that we all want to support Sangha, this is a way to do it.
Exactly.
We want to make that, as you say, as simple and straightforward as possible for people to be able to do that in their
lives. Yes. Mm-hmm. And along with this, I'll be able to hopefully figure out how to change the page layout so it's easier to read, and it looks more attractive, hopefully, and so there'll be some things that will be changing, but not, not dramatically.
So not so much that if you already are used to the site, if you're sort of familiar with it, it won't be a big change in order.
It won't be a big change, and I think the listing process will be pretty much the same. We also, we're going to have a new category, I believe, not a category, but we'll have a new section for new listings. So anyone that puts a new item on will be, you know, kind of featured somewhere on the front page as having a new listing.
Well,
so that's kind of fun.
Yeah, that is fun. If you're a Sangha Market regular and you're on there a lot, then you can always go straight to what's new.
Exactly. If you're, you know, if you just want to kind of browse and see what's going on, that would be an incentive to go on more often.
Definitely.
So, yeah. And then we'll be having, we're going to add some categories and delete some categories to make it more specific to what we've been doing in the past. And I'm getting, what's fun, Jen, is that I'm getting some suggestions and tips and ideas from Sangha and from, you know, the Sangha that's using it already. And new people are coming on and also offering new suggestions. I just think it's wonderful.
Yeah.
And two new categories are actually going to be, I'm going to try to get those on as a direct result of these suggestions. And one is a holiday and special event category where we can kind of plan in advance what we might want to either highlight or we could even have like specials going on for Mother's Day or, Christmas holiday.
That's perfect. So, yeah, I think on Thursday we talked about, so if Mother's Day is coming up, then we can feature all the things that might be really nice gifts for one's mother and for Father's Day and graduation and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, so that, and then also we're going to have a new category called Wanted Stuff. So this will be a category where people can tell Sangha what they are needing or what they would like, kind of a wish list, and people can go on and check that and see if they might have that to sell to somebody.
And, you know,
another way
yeah.
for them to raise money for for Living Compassion. So
exactly, there was a woman who called into the show after that, after you did the interview on Thursday,
uh-huh.
said she had one of those. I think it was she said she'd been saving her, you know, favorite practice quotes and little practices
exactly.
and that kind of thing, yes. little cards
huh?
forever and ever, thinking, oh, pretty soon I'm going to put together a daily book for myself, and just never gets to it. And, you know, put out there, hey, if someone would be willing to take those and make them into a book for me, I would pay for it. And so that's such a great section to have that, because I could just imagine someone saying, oh, well, I'd be willing to do that. I would have never thought to list it on Sangha Market, but sure, I could do that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, and I just want to encourage sellers who are, or people who are thinking of putting their items on. There is a learning curve to this. It's not something that you can just kind of, you know, say, well, I got 2 minutes, I want to do this. There is a learning curve, and I found that it's. There is a learning curve with all of these selling websites.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we're trying to make it easier. And, of course, with the auction platform gone, I think it will be easier. So just to please, take the plunge and take the next step and do it. It's a lot of fun. I'm having a good time with it.
It is fun.
For sure.
And one of the things I appreciated in the conversation we had before about it was that place where, of course, it's a learning curve. Everything is. When we first,
yes.
but you know, everything is tricky when we're first doing it. I mean, yeah, and so taking the time to do it, as you say, especially because it's for practice, and so it's for me. You know, everything
yes.
we do in practice, it's for me, not Jen, but for whoever we are.
Right.
It's for
right.
you know that person, and so it's a gift, really, not just for the Sangha in taking the time to do it. I mean, it is. But it's also part of my practice. I'm going to take the time to stop and do this and, you know, figure out how to do it. It's a little lesson in adequacy, you know, oh, God, it's too much, it's so big, I can't. And to find out, no, actually, after I learn how to do it, it's actually quite simple. And as you say, it can start to be fun.
Oh, yes, yes. And I also want to make myself available, for people who are technically challenged, that I am available to answer questions, and I can be reached through through the website, with the contact us button or whatever. You send me an email,
okay.
and I can email you back. Usually things can be handled through the email quite nicely, but I'm willing to also, make an appointment, phone appointment with somebody, and we can just go step by step through the process.
Right. So if it doesn't sort of happen for someone as you're trying to learn it, if you come up against a stumbling block, there's support there to work through it.
Yes, yes. Right. I'm telling you, these people that we have our website with have been so patient with me. It's like I have been, they don't have a phone line, but we chat online, and it's like they have been so there with me every step of the way. So
right.
You know, I'm taking a lesson from them on how to be able to help others that have that same problem, and because
yeah.
I am definitely technically challenged in this area. So.
Oh, well, that's perfect then. We teach what we want to learn.
Exactly.
Excellent. Good.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just keep thinking every time we talk about Sangha Market, I think, you know, all of us spend so much money over whatever period of time on all kinds of things, you know, little things, big things. And so I think some of it is just changing our habits of where we go to buy things.
Exactly. And I think I mentioned on the Thursday show that I did kind of a little research on Etsy, which is the go-to website for handcrafted items. And one of the reviews was that it was like around 90% of the buyers were also sellers on the site. So that's why I would like to build up our seller base. You know, I think that's the answer to what we're doing.
Me too.
And also to encourage sellers to please be patient. Don't take it personally.
Exactly.
If I took it personally, I would not be on there.
Oh,
but I just know that this is going to work if we just keep at it one step at a time. And we're just now taking the next step. So
that's a great, great point, because it's going to, at a certain point, there's going to be a turning point, and it's just going to take off. But we can't pull out before that happens and think, well, my thing isn't selling. And so it's going to take all of us just continuing. And then at a certain point, there'll be this, you know, sort of place where there's enough of us on there selling and buying that it will start to really move.
Absolutely. I have all the faith that it will do that. With this group, for sure.
I remember hearing when we were doing the DPAT process, the Deepening Practice Action Plan email class and some of the support calls and that sort of thing, that someone wrote into their plan that she was going to buy something every month on Sangha Market. And I thought, how
wonderful
fun is that? You know, there are all these goals people have around selling or, you know, making the $1,000, but I'm going to commit to buying at least one thing on Sangha Market every month. I love that.
Yeah, I think that's a wonderful direction that we can all go into, because that is not a huge amount of money. I mean, that's just a very small amount. And I'm telling you, there is a couple of items on there that I can't do without now. I've really enjoyed the soap and the body lotions. And, you know, it's like, these are things that I would buy anyway.
Exactly.
You know? And they make great hostess gifts, you know, and I'm taking them to someone's house that I'm going to dinner in a couple of weeks. It's like I can think of different ways to use these items that, you know, I would just go out and buy things anyway.
Yeah, and then you can tell them where you bought it.
Exactly, yes.
Maybe we should have little business cards made that we can hand out. I bought this on Sangha Market. Go check it out.
Ooh, sounds good, Jen. I'll have to put that on my list now.
All right, Nancy. Well, thanks for joining us again this evening.
All right. Well, thank you, Jen.
Okay.
Thanks, everybody.
Care.
All right. Bye-bye now.
All right, Michael, we'll pass it over to you and Sherry.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jen. Thank you, Nancy.
Welcome.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Hi, Michael. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. Right. I'm on retreat, you know.
Yes, I became aware of that over the weekend.
So I'm very, very good. This song, it makes me smile. It just does.
Great.
Listening to those two, I just got a great big old grin on my face, and I determined that I'm going to do the thing that Jen was just talking about. I'm going to make a commitment. You know, people have commitments to the radio show to call in every month or every 6 weeks or whatever. I'm going to buy something from Sangha Market every month. You know, there are a ton of things that I want. I just need to commit to doing it.
Yes, and I just realized that Mother's Day is not that far away.
I have people I could tell to buy me presents on Sangha Market.
Great.
Yeah.
Great. I have some announcements here.
Right.
We have three, count them, three, There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreats on the schedule in the spring. This is a fabulous 8-day retreat about having compassion for yourself and for everyone.
And I have a little insider information that we only have two now.
Okay.
Because one of them is completely full. Unless they're taking people on waiting lists, now we're down to two. So people better hop on it.
Yes, great, great. And what I love about compassion is that it's not personal. And it seems, in my experience, that learning it for myself, it just becomes automatic for everybody and everything, and I get included in that.
That is such an important point, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, very fun. We also have a What You Practice Is What You Have retreat coming up in June. See your life through a completely different lens.
That's the one that we're in right now, and I can attest it's a good one.
Great, great. All this info and more at schedule.livingcompassion.org. And I'd like to remind our callers to focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes. Let's get started. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Michael and Sherry. This is Chris.
Well, hello,
hi.
Chris. How are you?
I'm well, thanks.
Good.
It's been, you know, I was thinking today, I've been actually pretty regular, I don't know, 2010, 2011, as far as calling in on every 6 weeks on my day off, but ever since my retreat last October, I've really kind of fallen asleep at the wheel at the wrong time, and so...
You woke up.
I did. Well, it's funny, I woke up 10 minutes too late last week, which was my day off. Right now I'm in a parking lot on my way home from work. But I definitely want to get in and get a call.
Good, good. How is everything going?
Everything's going well. So this Elise is doing well. She had a successful surgery and is exploring what I love. It's funny, you know, alternative medicine is, well, alternative to what? Well, it's the alternative to what the medical establishment offers, which is just kind of an interesting phrase. Anyway, she's exploring all those kinds of options and finding some good things to do besides what they want to tell her to do.
So she is involved in the spirit of inquiry that we have been talking about so much lately.
Yes, yes.
She's learning, yes, and looking and seeing and allowing to arise in conscious compassion and awareness. What are the next best steps for her to take?
Precisely. And I'll let her go into more detail of the call. I know she's been talking about wanting to call. I think she can't do it today. But anyway, so just want to throw that out there. I've been noticing one thing that came up. I'm so glad to have reflective listening back. I really missed that while it was gone.
Uh-huh.
And I had my first call last week, and it was nice to have that again.
Oh, good. Yeah, it was under reconstruction, right, for a whole quarter. So.
Well, under tweaking, I don't know. It seems
tweaking.
I can.
That's better.
Because it's reconstruction. I don't know. It's at the end of the day for me, it ends up to be much the same. But I can see what was done, and that's someone obviously put a lot of time and effort into doing that.
Good.
I'm glad to have that back. I mean, one thing I was talking about on my call was just the awareness lately, and I've sort of had it before, but not quite so detailed or whatever. Just that I can't, no matter how much I want to or somebody wants to have everybody else do the work for me, I actually have to do it all, and I can't actually depend on my brother to be a certain way, or my wife, or my children, or whomever, to be a certain way so I can be okay. I actually have to follow through for myself. And
isn't that just a misery? I hate that. If people would just be how they are supposed to be, then I wouldn't have to practice so hard.
I know. Anyway.
And we can kid about it, but aren't we lucky, actually, that we know who has to do the work, and that we know that we can do the work, and we have great tools and support for doing it.
Yes, yeah, definitely. And following through has not been something I've been doing a lot of recently, and I'm jumping right back into it.
Well, you know, the thing about it is,
yeah,
and I know you know all this, but I'm going to say it anyway, that conditioning holds us to these artificial standards. So practice looks like this. No matter what happens in your life, you need to be exactly the same way. And life, of course, isn't like that at all. So there are big events in our lives, and when those big events come up, we do whatever we need to do in order to navigate our way through that. And it doesn't look the same as when there's, in quotes, nothing going on. But that's like saying you know, the workday should look like the day off, or all of my life should be the way it is when I'm at the beach. And only conditioning would want us to believe that and then try to hold us to those standards so that we would be properly miserable when we're unable to pull it off. So, yeah, a lot of stuff is going on, and so you have not been practicing in the way you were practicing before a lot was going on. Now things kind of, life sort of returns to what we're more used to, and what arises with that is the ability to return to practice that's more the way you're used to doing it.
Yeah, and thank you for putting it that way, because that offers up a really big picture for me to view it through, because conditioning was, it's like you said, it's also, if I was really doing practice right, I'd be practicing even more during these times of stress, even more in the way that I would, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and it would be lovely for us if it worked that way. But there are times in life when it feels a lot like survival, and we're just doing the best we can to make our way through it, keep our head above water, be as kind as we can to everybody around us, and take care of the things that need to be taken care of in spite of all of the stress, the increased stress that's going on. And if we do that, you know, we come through it, and the people in our lives still love us and are speaking to us, and you know, we've held down the job and we've made the mortgage payments and that sort of thing, we deserve big congratulations, because it's a lot to get through.
Mm-hmm. Well, great. That's just what I need to hear.
Good. Call me anytime.
Okay, I will.
All right. Thank you.
You bet.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Chris. You're listening to Open Air. And we have another caller, Sherry.
Thank you, Michael.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Thank you. Good evening. I'm Eric, the man who can now hear the voices.
Aha, the man of voices. How are you?
Helped me over the last several years. Hello.
Hi. What's going on now?
A little help. I just finished the last email course, which is a great concept that you do on resistance. And that's great that it's available by email and access the questions and all the answers that you post. You learn as much reading everyone else's as you do from your own sometimes.
Isn't that the truth? That's what we love best about Sangha.
Yeah, and the fact that you leave it posted, so after the course you can just keep kind of going back through things. So that leads around to my question. I moved through the course quite comfortably until the very last assignment, when I think I took a left turn and everyone else carried on. So the last assignment, Class 8, was wrapping up sort of the whole, bringing all the different classes together about ending suffering, and the assignment was to look at a conditioned behavior, just so everyone frames the answer, that leads to suffering, commit to changing, and what recurring thought or emotion can you plunge into, and then report on that process. So I thought, okay, I thought I did that, and what I reported on was, as you change, you keep committing to that change, and then falling off or going back and doing the bad thing, if we're going to just give it a name. And so I'm trying to be clever and do it in short words. I said it's like a candle being blown out. I have to keep relighting it. I'm doing the same thing over and over. It seems like insanity. I can't stay on the quote, good path, if you can let me use some words.
Uh-huh.
And so the response was that I didn't do the assignment and I didn't understand it. I thought, nope, I either I didn't communicate or I didn't understand that last lesson. I was trying to tie it into self-hate as a bad habit thing, but there aren't voices. You do the habit. No one's, you know, beating you up about it. You just go and do it. So can you point me? I went through the lessons again, and I have a hunch I've got to just go back to them again a couple more times, and I will get there. I guess the first couple came easy, and I'm stuck on this one.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I'm delighted that you continue to refer to that material, because – it really is true that we're changing all the time in practice. And so you do those lessons the first time through, and by the time you get to, in your case, number seven, you're a different person. So you go back and start again with the first one, and of course the voices want to say, oh no, come on, you've already done that. And they would like to present you with exactly the same material that you got the first time, right? So they want to say, okay, well, this is the answer to that, and that's how you feel about that, and that's what happens with that. But if we're really present and allow life to guide us, then we could do something like that over and over. It's like the 30-day retreat. You know, you get to the 30-day retreat, and you start over again.
And I do that over and over, and sometimes I've done, it's the same question, I've gotten the same answer, and the same as last time, and then the fifth time through, I'm like, oh, that's not it.
Uh-huh.
And the course, sometimes I'm reading my posting going, who wrote this? You know, you're from coming from it, and it can be what happened to you that day or something. Yep.
Precisely. So that's the beauty of understanding practice to be coming back to the same moment that's always a different moment. So the moment is always new. Everything is new, split second by split second. And when we're present to it, as we get used to that, we realize, first of all, that it is. We have to be grossly inattentive not to notice how completely life changes from second to second to second. And, of course, that's the job of egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate, is to keep us in a state of inattention so that we don't notice that everything is different, especially us. So one of the ways that we can see the truth of that is by, in fact, doing the same thing over and over. And we have to make the little quote marks, because there is no same thing and there is nothing that we can do over and over. But if we do something, say, a sitting practice, so I sit every day, I begin to see, if I'm paying attention, if I can get out of the conversation in my head about my meditation and I'm really actually sitting, then I begin to realize that, oh, there's this whole cast of characters who comes to meditation, and how the content of awareness is changing all the time. And there are cycles and patterns, and, you know, for a while the focus of attention is on X, and then that goes away completely, and there's, you know, one is absorbed in Y. And so the benefit of repeating cannot be emphasized enough, the benefits. So that my encouragement would be for you to continue doing essentially what you're doing, and that is go through it again and see where you land when you get to the eighth assignment.
Mm-hmm. And once before I called in and you'd given some advice along the lines of just saying, no, you're right where you should be. This is, and that, you know, it's not trying to fill the ego. It's really helpful just to know, yep, you're on that path, pull a bit harder, and you go, okay.
Yes, exactly.
All right.
In fact, on the retreat that we're doing right now, we've been having this very conversation about always being in exactly the right place at the right time, and that everything that's happening is happening perfectly for our liberation.
Right.
Now, conditioning says, oh, no, you know, good meditations and getting the right answer and always being cheerful, that's good practice. But in fact, everything that's happening, even in the words of the class, you know, realizing, whoa, I've been feeding that bad wolf, you know, all week long. Conditioning would say, and you, that makes you a bad Zen student. Only conditioning would say that, because when we step back just a little and look at it, we realize that that experience that I've been having is exactly what it took to position me here in this moment where I can see what I am now seeing. And without that experience, I wouldn't be seeing it now.
So in lesson 8, when I was saying, it feels like my candle, my brightness, my jewel is going out and I got to relight it, what I'm saying is you're losing awareness of that presence. And what I'm hearing you tell me, saying, yeah, it gets better over time. It'll stay lit longer and longer as you learn to stay with that moment and you just keep coming back to it. as you do in meditation, when you let the thought go and come back to it again, the point of lesson 8 was to be in the moment. If you were changing a behavior and it starts to drift, then you bring yourself back to the change that you want and just deal with this moment.
That's right. That's exactly right. And what we're learning to do is lose interest in judgments and assessments.
You just say, oops, I made a mistake, and come back.
Well, or not even that. Because by saying, oops, I made a mistake, I'm out of the moment.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
Technically to say I'm back is taking me out of the moment. So we just enjoy being here.
Oh, so if you've said, I'm not going to eat this chocolate bar, I'm not going to have this drink, I'm not going to have this cigarette, and you just had one, you say, but I'm not having one now.
That's right. That's right. And here I am now. And
now.
What happened then? Well, that's over, and there's really nothing to be done about it. So we just did this again in the retreat, where what conditioning wants to do is get you to look at the past where you had that cigarette, that drink, that chocolate bar, and tell you that you will then do that same thing in the future. So it's predicting the future based on what you did in the past. And the only way out of that trap is to get into the present. So it's not happening now.
Thank you.
You're so welcome. Anytime.
Thank you.
Take care. Talk to you soon.
And best wishes.
All right. And to you. Good night.
Namaste.
Thank you for joining us, Eric. You're listening to Open Air. And we have another caller, Sherry.
Right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Well, hi, Sherry. It's Dinah.
Hello, Dinah.
Hi. That was a really great last caller. That was perfect to hear all of that and be reminded of just letting it go.
Just letting it go.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, because whatever it is, so, you know, I just did something, and let's say that I did something that I know is not good for me. It doesn't take care of my body, doesn't take care of my heart, whatever it is. And that really happened.
It does.
Talking about it, allowing conditioning to beat me up over it, to drag it out of that moment where it happened and into this moment where it's not happening, is just not helpful. It doesn't help anything. We're conditioned to believe that by being beaten up over something, it'll make us better in the future. But all it does is just ruin another moment.
Yes, I've spent much of my life thinking of the past, and that there's been habits that I've had and things I've done that I know aren't good for me, that now I know it was conditioning telling me, well, you don't even know who you are without that thing. You can't possibly live without that. You've never lived without that.
Yeah.
And that was all it, trying to keep me away from my goal and keep me out of the present moment where I was doing exactly what I wanted to be doing.
Yeah, where you were just fine. You know, you don't even know who you are without that. And then you look down and realize, well, I'm here. I may not know who I am, but, gosh, I'm alive, I'm breathing, I'm actually smiling. Thank you. I think I'm fine.
Yes. And I've had such a great experience with changing some of those really major things by not focusing on them, which is a direction that you led me in about where we focus our attention is really what we have.
Mm-hmm.
And by focusing on the really little things that I was accomplishing, and not focusing on what I felt were these major things, I was like so much more liable to move in the direction of accomplishing the major things.
Yes.
Because I was giving myself credit for the little things.
Yes, you were focused on accomplishing. And focusing on accomplishing, of course, leads to accomplishing.
Yes, and I was focusing on the really silly, tiny accomplishings, things that conditioning was just throwing a fit about. Those don't even count. They're so small. But I counted them anyway, and I just felt invigorated and great about the fact that I was able to accomplish these 4 or 5 things, and I didn't allow conditioning to add to the list or tell me I had to do more than I had originally planned or, you know, all those kinds of things. I just kept it real small, and I actually got one of those grade school stick the stars on the board. And
that's great.
Yeah. And so I got all these really fun little stickers that they use in probably kindergarten or something. And there is a part of me that just loves to get those silly stars or good jobs or terrifics or...
Yeah.
So I only have, you know, certain days I keep track of it, but I do keep track, and there's only 6 or 8 things, and it just has lit me up on so many levels to see those accomplishments and then see how much further I can go from a place of joy instead of a place of beating myself up.
Right, or allowing conditioning to beat you up. Again, I know people know this, but it never hurts to consider it again. So... Egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate, says when you, whatever it is, fill in the blank, then you can feel the way you want to feel. So if you do these things that you're supposed to do, then you'll be happy. Then you can relax. Then you'll be. And so what you've realized is that by doing 4 or 5 things, little things, and getting stars for doing them, you feel exactly the way you want to feel.
Yeah.
And so why would you want to leave that experience where you're having the feeling in life that you want to have? Why leave that to accomplish something that a voice in your head says is important for you to accomplish that is actually only being presented because you won't be allowed to accomplish it? And then there will be the reason that you should feel miserable.
Yes, exactly. Instead of this great lit up feeling that the other side gives me.
Precisely.
It's just been incredible. It's like something about that last email class allowed me to step outside and really kind of see it all taking place. And really, I'm also reading your book, How to Get from Where You Are to Where You Want to Be, or From Where You Are to Here You Are.
Yeah.
Exactly. So it brought me the idea of it's not what but how. And so I'm really able that the looking at it that way has allowed me to step outside and say, okay, how is this all happening? And seeing it like they are players in a little play.
Yes.
And I've just become so much more detached. Instead of saying it's all me, it's like it's this elaborate comedy, actually. You know, play
that we
going
thought
on.
Was a drama.
Yes, exactly. And so, like, the last couple of days, I normally spend, I work alone, and so the last couple of days I've been in training with a lot of other people, and I was able to really see how conditioning kicked in and what it was saying to me and, you know, all of its expectations for the situation. And there were times I really laughed out loud about the silly things that it was trying to pull. And never in my life have I done that. Never have I been able to step outside like that, I don't think. I probably would have been in tears after these meetings.
Oh, yes. Oh,
yeah.
Absolutely. That
you know,
that was what it was designed to do. All under, we're being told, of course, that it's there to take care of you, to help you be successful, to protect you in dangerous circumstances. And actually, when you step back, you realize, oh, no, it has one agenda, and that's to create suffering.
Yeah, and it actually fulfills its own agenda really effectively.
Yeah.
I've been so surprised at how effective it is. And then learning what my buttons are, you know, how I just have certain hot buttons, like everyone has certain hot buttons.
Yes.
So anytime those buttons are poked, I can know it's okay to drop it.
Yeah, yes.
You know, that's just my buttons being poked. And it's not a big deal. It's not, you know, all about me, basically, which is what kind of conditioning wants to have everyone revolves. Everything they do is about me.
Even people who don't know me.
Yes, even complete strangers.
Yes, it's still about me. Uh-huh.
Yeah, almost especially strangers, because they're kind of unknowns.
All right. Well, I'm glad it's working.
Yeah, thank you, Sherry.
You're really welcome.
Grateful. Life is wonderful, and have a wonderful evening. Thank you, Michael and Sherry.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Dinah. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to hear from our sponsors, and then we'll be back.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Greta from Washington State.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. This is David calling from Hawaii.
This is Janet calling from New Hampshire.
Hi, this is Catherine from St. Louis.
It's Rebecca from Austin, Texas.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. It's Anna here from Yorkshire in England.
It's Ramita calling from South Carolina.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. This is Todd calling from Canada.
2012 marks 10 years that Sherry and Michael have been doing Open Air. They have fielded thousands of your calls and archived hundreds of shows. In this year of deepening practice, we invite you to give a donation to support Open Air. Go to the Living Compassion website, click on the Donations tab, and make a donation of any size to the Zen Center, writing Open Air in the notes field. Step forward to be part of expanding the transformation. Lend your support today.
We're very lucky people.
We are very lucky people.
See you next week.
See you next week.
Good night.
Good night.
Hi, this is Scott from Porch Dog Software. Today we're talking with Lanny, one of Porch Dog's favorite clients. Lanny, what do you think Open Air listeners might want to know about working with Porch Dog?
Well, Scott, I think they might want to know that you write all kinds of software for Macs and iPhones and iPads and for all types of companies, big ones and small ones like mine. And you do your work with a lot of enthusiasm.
Yeah. You know, one of the things we love about Open Air is the energy and enthusiasm in every show. We try and get lit up about everything we do here at Porch Dog Software, too.
Everything?
Yep. Especially the things we don't like.
Sweet.
Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Beautiful song by Trish Bruxford Colligan invites us to celebrate the unique light each of us brings to the world. Simply Celebrate wants to support you in living into that light, no matter where you are on the path, but especially when it's a little hard to see in the dark. With great gratitude to Sherry Huber and this amazing Sangha, Simply Celebrate uses the practice as a foundation for everything we do. We offer coaching, books, and self-mentoring programs to help you find more joy, color, spontaneity, and connection moment to moment. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Welcome back to Open Air. Sure, we have another caller here.
Perfect.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, am I on?
Hello?
Hi, this is Stephen from South Carolina.
Hello, Stephen.
I'm planning on coming to the There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat next month.
Good.
And I've been doing the work actively for about a year now. I have taken two What You Practice Is What You Have email classes, and I've been very successful dealing with the voices. I've gotten to the point where they rarely speak to me anymore, and usually when they do, I'm able to put a stop to them pretty quickly. So that's relieved me of a lot of suffering.
Yes, indeed.
Had in my life in the past, Sherry. But, you know, what I'm coming up against now is a level of mute resistance that doesn't usually express itself in voices. And I'm finding that harder to deal with because it's a layer of stuff that seems to be so much a part of who I've thought myself to be that it's a lot harder to see. And what's happened recently is that I think I've had this dominant sub-personality that I'll just call it the taskmaster that has pushed me to work very hard and be compulsive and perfectionistic, and I was a programmer and a web developer, and that profession almost requires you to be compulsive and perfectionistic. And in the last month or month and a half, I feel like that taskmaster has let go and fallen away, and that seems to have been the main thing that motivated me to get out and work hard and accomplish things. And I've gotten to a place now where my inner economy seems to be so rearranged with that taskmaster falling out that I really feel stuck in my life right now. I've been allowing myself to just wait and, you know, and just take it easy and not try to push and find out what the next step is. But here lately, I've been feeling sort of depressed. And so I felt like, you know, I've got these other sub-personalities that are conflicting with each other and bringing me to the point of inaction, because the inner economy is so rearranged now. And so I thought that I would try to work with these sub-personalities, although I don't really know very well how to do it. And so I tried to contact them, and especially the ones that are, or the one that's keeping me stuck, and, you know, and talk to it and find out what it needed and see if I could, be compassionate toward it. But Sherry, what I'm getting is either dead silence, or else today I finally got one of them to speak, and it said, "You've been so mean to me that I really don't want to talk to you. What can I do in a situation like that? How can I work with them if they won't talk to me?"
Right, yeah. Okay, so the taskmaster took another job somewhere in another state, it sounds like. So without that, are you not working right now?
No. I had been trying to do a little web design business, and I had a lot of obstacles and a lot of frustrations, and that's sort of gotten to the point where this taskmaster just fell away, because everything that I was trying to do was being frustrated. So I've backed away from that now and just decided that I really don't want to do that right now, and I'm just going to wait and see see what comes to me. But
okay, so we could say you're in a time of discernment, but so that's what you're doing in your life. And so who are the personalities that it feels like are most dominant now that the taskmaster is not there?
It feels to me like there is an aspect that opposes all my natural impulses, and it comes from, for me at least, it comes from a very ascetic view of spirituality that says all your natural impulses are sinful. And so it feels like, you know, if I have an impulse to get up and go to the gym and work out, I feel this subtle sensation which is saying, nope, don't want to do that, can't do that. And it feels like there's that just just wants to cancel out any impulse that I have.
Okay, and is that one of the places where nobody will talk to you? In other words, you can't get a conversation going with that person about that view of life
It's difficult to get a conversation going on with anybody in there. And the insight that I got just today is that there's also something in there that's blocking all intercommunication like that, because it believes that anything like that appears to it to be, quote, psychic, unquote, is spiritually dangerous and should be disallowed from manifesting.
Uh-huh. You got Reverend so-and-so in there, huh?
Well, Reverend, yeah, whoever he is.
Okay, but I mean that's where.
I got a strong dose of that kind of stuff going up.
Okay, well let's go in a different direction. What did they call you when you were little? What did your family call you when you were little?
Steve. Yeah.
Okay. No nicknames. No pet names.
No, not in the family anyway. I had some other nicknames outside the family.
But not necessarily pet names, huh? Okay, so Steve, and can you access him? Say the part of you who was there when you first started school, the little 5-6-year-old. Can you get a sense?
I can access him in memory, but I don't know whether I could get him to speak to me.
Well, all right. So here we go. There are a couple of exercises that you can do. I don't know if you're familiar with these, but the first one is non-dominant handwriting. Have you ever done any journaling like that?
No, not like.
Okay, so here's.
I don't think so. If I did, it was very short-lived.
Okay, so are you right-handed or left-handed?
I write right-handed, but I'm a little bit ambidextrous. But I write right-handed.
Okay, so you're going to take your pen in your right hand, and you're going to write something like, "Steve, will you come and talk to me?" And it would be helpful to have a kind of a picture of him, you know, when 6-7 years old, something like that. And and then put your pen in your non-dominant hand and wait and see what he writes back to you.
Okay. Writing, actually, writing is helpful to me. I find that I can a lot of times can access things by writing that I can't access by just sitting and waiting for an inner voice to speak.
Yeah. So try that one.
I actually feel like I could probably access that with my dominant hand,
him speak, because what you're trying to do is set up a relationship within yourself where these parts of you who have not been allowed to be around because the taskmaster sounds like it was running the show pretty totally. So you're now inviting them into your life. So you want them to come to you instead of you kind of chasing them down. So the other one that I would suggest is called a two-chair exercise. And what you do, so you're familiar, you do the recording and listening?
Yes.
Okay, and so you're familiar with the mentor. So in this exercise, you just set two chairs up opposite each other, and you sit down in one chair, and you can be sense yourself in the role of mentor or a kind of a facilitator to these folks who live inside you, and then you invite another aspect of yourself to sit opposite you. And again, if you have a memory of yourself, say in middle school, what you looked like. In those or early teenage years, or it doesn't really matter, but just to have a picture of somebody that you want to have a conversation with. And so you invite that person to come in and have him sit in the other chair. And then, again, you just ask him, you know, some kind of leading questions like, would you tell me a little bit about what your life is like? And then you get up and you go over and sit in the other chair and let him speak through you. Now, at first, of course, this sounds slightly wacky, but as you get into it, you'll realize that the different parts of you actually will come forth and speak. So then that part of you says, whatever, go over into the other chair, and now you're the facilitator or the mentor or the adult or the whatever, and you offer your side of the conversation, and you just start going back and forth talking to each other. Okay? So give that a go, and then give me a call and tell me what happened.
Okay, I will. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you. Take care.
Okay, bye.
Good night.
Bye. Thanks for joining us, Stephen. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. And we have another caller, Sherry.
Okay.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
This is Beth.
Well, hello, Beth.
Good evening. Okay, cutting to the chase, trying to stay within my 5 minutes. I have a question. I've got a new client, which I'm thrilled about.
A new client what?
I'm absolutely thrilled to have a new client.
Uh-huh.
They're not so common anymore.
Uh-huh.
She's kind of always saying things like things are meant to be.
Uh-huh.
And she's kind of like, she stops and waits for guidance, kind of stuff, but I'm not sure how to take it.
Uh-huh.
And as a Zen master, for some reason, it just kind of, it makes me uneasy. I'm not really quite comfortable with it.
Okay, so
give me. She's listening to projection.
Give me an example, would you?
I met this woman at a kind of a group, and somebody in the group was saying, you know, she was really sorry that these other people didn't make it to the group, and she was. And then my new client said, you know, well, you know, they didn't make it because they weren't meant to be here.
Uh-huh.
And we made it because we were meant to be here.
Uh-huh. And then the waiting for guidance part, how does that manifest?
I have no idea. I mean, I just have projections on there as far as what that means to her kind
uh-huh.
of thing.
Uh-huh. Okay. So if I were doing that, and of course I have no idea what she's doing, right? We don't know what she's doing. But if I said something like that, I would have confused is with supposed to.
Supposed to.
So we're here because we're here. And they're
yes.
not here because they're not here.
Yes, you do this, this happens, you do that, that happens.
Well, you do this, and this happens. So, in other words, all we know for sure is what is, and then we realize when we look a little closer that we're not actually sure what is.
I'm very sure of very little. And the further I go into practice, the less sure I am of anything.
Yes. However, we can, you know, if we're there in the room together, we can all agree that on some kind of gross level, we're all here together.
Yeah. And you said something earlier in an earlier conversation about, you know, what comes up is what needs to come up.
What comes up is what needs to come up. Is
okay.
that what I said? Huh?
Well, it's like projected that you said.
Okay. Oh, God knows what I said. We could listen to the archives. I won't, but you could, and maybe let me know.
I do.
But I think that the thing that I was attempting to point at is that each moment of life, when we look at it this way, as soon as we see it this way, now, all of it's made up, right? So I could either think that God is out to get me, or I could think I truly am chosen. Now, is there any truth or validity to any of that? Probably not. But if we're going to make something up, that's as good a thing to make up as anything. So I'm going to make up that every moment of life is I am perfectly where I need to be. Because how do I know that? Well, it's where I am. So since there's no alternative universe in which I am somewhere else, then reasonably and logically, I can know that it's where I need to be.
Okay.
Yeah. So with that, we could say, you know.
Yeah, I don't like that. Never mind. I don't like that.
I don't like which.
The things are the way they are because, well, they are. They are this way.
Yeah.
Okay, never mind. I'm lost. I'm sorry. Okay, for me, a couple of things are coming up with this. One is, in my previous incarnation, I was a biblical scholar.
Uh-huh.
You know, studied Greek. I was on my way to being a pastor, and I lost my faith.
Uh-huh.
Continually, the Christian part of me continues to try to do Buddhism. It doesn't work.
Uh-huh.
There's relying on
well,
that.
Well, let's break that down, okay? A belief system, a set of beliefs and assumptions, looking at another set of beliefs and assumptions, is always going to produce something unpleasant.
Yes. Okay. Because they're solid.
Yeah, so even with the language, if there really were a Christian part of you, a Christian part of you wouldn't necessarily need to have trouble with Buddhism.
No, but, yeah, I mean, I continually try to have beliefs. And I continually try to have something to believe in.
Yes.
So for me, who means me to be here is my projection of God.
Yes.
And it's like, and by taking away the name God and calling it the universe, calling it life, if I'm willing 1%, the universe gets behind me 99%. There's still that universe that means me to be something.
Well, yes.
I didn't say that anywhere close to anything.
Yeah, if you want to frame it that way, then that's how it'll look to you. So what I'm talking about is the realization that in each moment, everything that I need to see and see through, let go, accept, embrace, let go, in order to what do we want to say, to experience freedom, to be completely present, to be at one with life, to live from authentic nature, you know, what be one with all that
to
is.
Surrender.
Well, to be one with all that is, to be in a non-separate reality. Everything that I need to get past in order to be at one with all that is in a non-separate reality is present in each and every moment. So if I want
to... And my mind is never going to understand this. I'm never going to get the answer from you that's going to satisfy my mind. It's not a mind understanding.
Not conditioned mind.
Yes.
Heart mind. Heart mind, yeah.
And, ha, okay. And that's to embrace, let go.
Say that again?
Accept, embrace, let go.
Yes. So heart mind understands that completely. Conditioned mind, not so much.
And it's my mind that's been kind of toying this around.
Conditioned mind.
Like conditioned mind has been
toying this. And in fact, when we say my mind, that is synonymous
conditioned
with
mind.
Conditioned mind. So if
so there really
looking,
is nothing
if,
for me to do with this.
If you're looking to conditioned mind for answers and clarity, you're going to always stay in confusion.
I'm in confusion a lot.
Because we know why now, huh?
Yes.
Yeah, because you're looking to a confusion machine in order to try to understand.
Yes.
And, of course, we can understand that we're confused by looking there, but that's not usually what people are going for when they look there. Actually, it is what people are going for when they look there, but that's not what people believe they're going for. You see what I mean by that?
I almost did.
Yeah. So if I want to stay in confusion, I know where to look. If I want clarity, I know where not to look. Most people say they want clarity, but what they choose is confusion.
Well, it just feels like the answer is just around the next corner.
It does. That's how people get lulled into the quagmire of figuring it out. You're almost there. You know, if conditioned mind says, forget it, sister, you're never going to get this. I'm just running a scam on you so that you'll keep supporting me. Then you might have a different approach. But what it says is, you're almost there. You're so close. Just look a little deep. Just spend a little more time. Just make a little more effort. You're almost there.
Yeah.
So the poor person chugs along.
Yeah.
And of course it's like Alice. Oh, did you want to
Alice.
Get somewhere? Then you have to go much faster.
Have to run really fast just to stay in place.
That's right.
Yes. Which boils down again to, am I willing?
That's right. And of course we know the I is never willing.
Nope.
Yeah. So we don't want to look to that quarter for help either.
Nope. That's the one that's gotten me recently. It's all up to me. I'm all alone in this.
So that's the get you alone. Get
yep.
you off.
And I is alone.
Yeah. Get you off into a dark room where you're gonna take all of this on and solve it for yourself. And oh Lordy.
Again and yet again.
Yeah. So the answer is always the same, isn't it? You got to drop it. Drop it and just come back here. Space between the thoughts. Figuring it out. No getting it right. No stories. No drama. Just here, breathing, aware, awake, present. No problems.
Here, breathing, no problem.
Okay. Your assignment.
You. Listen to this again.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Beth. And thank you, Sherry, for the many reminders to come back here.
The old stop, drop, and breathe.
It's great. I can never hear it too often.
Second by second by second, we need to remember, don't we?
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. Thankfully, we have an extraordinary practice that supports us in that.
Have we reached that magic hour?
We have. We have.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Talk to you in a few days.
Okay, great.
All right. Good night, Mike.
Bye.